Greetings and welcome to another episode of the Hammer and Umpire podcast. As always, I'm your host, Kevin Weber. I've got the bulk of this podcast is going to be about reporting on the Doan two-man camp that happened this past weekend here in Grand Rapids, Michigan, here in September 15th weekend. But I also have a couple of segments. Scott Ordway, a longtime listener, sent me some questions that I answer in a segment. And I also talk about working B and C position in two-man. There was a good article in one of the most recent referee magazines about that. So I thought that was something I wanted to touch on as well. So I've got quite a few things, mainly two-man mechanics that we're talking about. But that's something that most of us work most of the time anyway. Even the umpires that work some higher levels, they definitely get some two-man in every year. And that's the basis of everything that we seem to do in umpiring. So it's certainly something that we all can continue to improve on and get a little bit better. And it's something that has to be taught for the basic umpiring skills that we all want to develop and then move on to bigger and better and brighter pastures on the umpiring land. So hopefully you'll find some of these things valuable. Sit back and listen to another episode of The Hammer and Umpire Podcast. Longtime listener Scott Ordway sent me another email, which I always appreciate. He sent me a few, and any of you out there, I always love getting emails from listeners with questions or comments or whatever it might be, so feel free to do that. A good email to send it to, and it's in the show notes and everything on the Anchor app and all that. But it's spinalfusion06@yahoo.com. You can also send me some kind of message through social media as well if you ever want to. But anyway, Scott's email read like this. I said, "Hi, Kevin. I was wondering if you could break down the following questions on the podcast. One, how do you learn to discern when to step in or not when comments are being made from the dugout? There are obvious things that you will hear that need to be addressed. But what about things you are not sure about or are borderline? Seems like a chance to overstep without realizing it. Two, what is your opinion on asking to help on check swings when your partner is in B or C? I hear a lot of guys say to not bother asking in those cases. Three, if you have R3 and there is a wild pitch pass ball that goes toward the first baseline, where do you position yourself for a potential play at the plate? Seems like it would be a bad angle to go first baseline extended, but then again, the catcher seems like he would be in the way of you if you go third baseline extended. Thanks, Scott Ordway." All right. So again, thanks for the messages there that I've always been getting from you, Scott. Let's go with number one first. That seems logical. You know, how do you discern about things for comments from the dugouts? This is tricky. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And some guys are better equipped or, I don't know, more confident in the way that they handle things. So you probably know partners that are better than others. Some, they don't do anything, which is like the worst, okay? I certainly would rather have somebody maybe overstep or maybe they were incorrect or something like that than do nothing. Doing nothing is not the right solution. But anyway, okay, if you're unsure where the comments are coming from or you don't know who they're directed to, then you got to kind of, you know, maybe be looking and, you know, have those investigative ears and eyes out there. But if they are specific comments directed at the other team, particularly at the pitcher or maybe even the current hitter, but definitely when it's at the pitcher, you know, if the current hitter is on the other team I'm talking about, then you really need to step in. You got to shut that stuff down, especially if it's happening early in the game. If these teams have had a history, obviously those kind of things can kind of get themselves amped up, all right? People don't want to go out there and be the bad guy. Some people are too concerned about that. But then again, remember, we're not here to make friends. I mean, yeah, we want to be professional. We want people to not hate us and give us trouble and things like that. I understand that. But you still got a job to do. And one of them is to make sure people are being sportsmanlike. All right. So, because one thing leads to another, especially when you're dealing with young people out there. All right. A couple of examples. When I was working one of my semifinal games this past year, for the state high school finals, and it was big crowds at Michigan State and everything. We had some rowdy students for both teams, and there was a comment directed at me in particular. I was working the plate about like being short because I'm a short guy. All right, so I'm not going to take that from anybody in the dugout, but I took a couple steps over to address it, and I asked, "Is that from the dugout or up above you?" Because I couldn't tell. And they all like instantly pointed up. Now, could they have been lying? Maybe. But it seemed pretty genuine. There's nothing I can do when it comes from the crowd, right? But it was from there. I'm going to go over there and address that if they're addressing it toward me, obviously, if there's comments, okay? Any comments toward an umpire, man, we got to try to address that. But if it's from the crowd and somebody's just saying that you made a terrible call or something like that, you have to do your best to ignore it. If they're doing something, dangerous, or they're trying to incite some situation, or they're doing something that's racist or whatever, those kind of comments, or they're vulgar in some fashion, then you can talk to the game administration, whoever might be there, or the head coach of the home team, and try to get them removed. You're not going to need to be able to do that yourself. That's usually just causes trouble, all right? Another incident. I was working a junior college regional thing, and I was working third base. We were a three-man crew, and they had some teams that have been playing each other throughout the year. They're in the same conference, but they're also here playing in the regional, trying to go to the JUCO World Series or whatever. And this one third baseman, big old kid, big athletic kid that's a big home run hitter, a very good player. He's standing there playing third base, and I'm standing by him because nobody was on base. And this pitcher, and it's frequently like a PO or somebody, is like, saying something, back and forth. And then finally this third baseman is like, "Didn't I hit a bomb off of you?" And he's like, "No, that's on a little league field." And they're all kind of laughing. And, it was kind of funny a little bit. But, when you got 18, 20-year-olds or so, one thing leads to another, and then somebody gets insulted and pissed off a little bit, and then one thing leads to another. So, hey, that's enough, all right? Pretty soon somebody's just going to get upset, and we're going to have a problem. So, none of that. Quit talking to each other. I mean, I'm not saying they can't talk to each other if they're like, "Hey, how you doing? Hey, nice, nice poke there," whatever, "nice play you had out there in center field," or whatever they want to say. That's all fine. But when they're saying derogatory things, you got to stop that stuff too if you hear it as well. That's why, when it's in between innings, you have to be not running out to your position in between innings when players are passing each other. Just, one, it's just preventative. And two, if you do hear something, you can jump on the situation as needed. So you need to address things. And if you happen to be wrong and you kind of overstep, so what? Who cares? At least they know that, hey, you're not going to – that just sends a message that this guy is, in charge here, and he's not going to let people be ridiculous. So that's okay. I'd rather see that. Hopefully that answers your question there. All right, so take care of stuff coming from the dugouts, and make sure it's sportsmanlike, whatever level you're umpiring. All right, and do it early if possible. All right, second one. What's your opinion on asking for help on check swings in B or C? When I do pre-games with people, I say if I'm in B or C, come to me if you want, and I will give you what I have. And if somebody has a problem with it, we will issue a ball strike warning. That's exactly what I say. And that's what I suggest to you. These guys that say don't bother asking this and that, you have an opinion when you're in B or C. You can tell sometimes whether a guy swung or not. And if you believe he did, or didn't, then, that's fine. And if somebody has a problem, it is balls and strikes. They're arguing balls and strikes, so you issue a warning. In college baseball, you're required to go to the field umpire or umpires if the catcher or home plate or the head coach asks. So I'm always doing that. When I'm working levels below college baseball, I always go. Now, if you're the home plate umpire and you can get it, it's nice if you can get it yourself in B and C, but then sometimes people give you trouble for that. They're like, "Why don't you go ask?" That kind of stuff. So you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't, I guess. But then again, if somebody starts complaining about anything that deals with balls and strikes, and check swings are all about balls and strikes because it's either a ball or a strike, right? Then immediately don't be afraid to issue that ball strike warning. I've issued ball strike. You're like, I've had people come to me and I made a call and one of the teams didn't like whatever I called. And then I called time and I gave them ball strike warning from the field. I mean, I will do that. If you're going to complain about what I just did, I'm going to do it. I mean, and I've done it the other way where I've gone and somebody complains and I stop, and as a plate umpire, if they're complaining about my partner's call, then I'm going to give a ball strike warning. So just don't put up with any of that. That will stop it right away. Nobody will ever say anything about your ball strikes for the rest of that game or doubleheader or whatever it might be. All right? Okay, so hopefully the answer is number two. Definitely go. I mean, that's what we're supposed to do. Help our partners out, right? Three, if you this is a tricky one. If you have a runner on third and there's a wild pitch, pass ball that goes toward the first baseline, where do you position yourself for a potential play at the plate? Seems like it would be a bad angle to go to first baseline extended, but then again, the catcher seems like he'd be in your way if you go third baseline extended. Yeah, I mean, the wild pitches of any sort, even the ones, you know, right in back, you know, I don't care where they go, back to the backstop, can be tricky to get yourself. You don't want to get in the way of the ball coming towards you, you know, like if a catcher is throwing it to the pitcher, or the pitcher's cover, you know, the pitcher, maybe like a first baseline one, if it's a weird one that goes up the line, maybe the pitcher could get there and toss it to the catcher or whoever it is. I guess we just got to think the best we can of wedge theory here, you know, when you're working a base. So you want to be on the glove side, you know, which is usually the left side for 90% of everybody, of the fielder, or where they're going to be. So if it's a catcher, I mean, 99% of our catchers are, you know, right-handed, so they got their glove on the left hand. So you can be on that left hip, and you can move with him. You might end up around the front of the plate, you know, like in fair territory, to get that view. Just don't lock yourself into where you have to be. I mean, you have to be conscious of staying out of the way of any potential toss or a little throw that might come there for that play, but you also don't want to have bodies between you so you just get blocked out. So first baseline extended, I mean, yeah, it could be third baseline extended. You might have a nice view there if it's just over there, the pitcher gets it and tosses it there, you might have a good view, all right? If it's the catcher that's grabbing it, the pitcher's coming in, you might be third baseline extended. You might have to rotate as it's tossed and get around the front of the plate to be able to see it. You just have to kind of adjust with that. Those are tricky, though, no doubt about it. I mean, and every situation's a little bit different, I'd say. So hopefully that answers your questions, Scott. Once again, thanks for the email. I always appreciate it. And like I say, anybody else that wants to send me some kind of message or something, I'm always happy to read it and do what I can with it.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, The Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
There's an interesting article in the newest Referee magazine by Chris Marshall about two-man positioning, you know, the proper spots to be in B and C. There's always some unwarranted debate about that. If you look at manuals, you look at the way they teach it in professional school, you look at the way that it's taught at the collegiate level, and also at the high school level when people are doing things properly. There's not really much of a debate where you should be, but we see a lot of people, and I'm sure you might notice this too, that are like too deep or in a not the best positioning to help themselves out to make a good call. So it's definitely worth it. But some of the things that they were mentioning that I'm going to be trying to teach in this upcoming two-man camp that I'm helping out with, the Doan two-man camp here in the Grand Rapids area. Like, where do you stand in BNC? So, like, umpire school, and the way I was taught, too, and I didn't go to umpire school, but this is the way I was taught, the two-umpire B position is defined as a position, like, halfway between the back edge of the mound and the cutout at second base. And it's on a tangent line from the corner of home plate through the first base side of the mound. So umpires are instructed to, you know, put their belt in the middle of the tangent line in the grass, once again at the midpoint between the cutout and the back edge of the mound, you know, square to home plate. So this position establishes the best position you could have for considering all possible plays that an umpire might get in a two-umpire system, which, you know, frequently for the base umpire is a play at any of the three bases, right? But the issue we usually see more often than not is a C position, because more often than not, an umpire will be deeper in C position than they are in B position. So I don't know exactly why this is. I think it may be as guys are thinking they might get hit by a ball. You know, there's a lot more right-handed hitters, and they think they're going to get pulled. A ball's going to get pulled right into them. I mean, that certainly could happen, but it's just as likely to happen, you know, in B position with the lefty up there, or sometimes a righty that's going the other way. You know, those things kind of can happen. So one of the things Marshall kind of talks about there is that your distance in C position should be the same as it is in B position. Your B position establishes your C. All right. So if you notice that, you know, because I know I kind of try to line up where I can see first base for that pickoff the best I can. I try to get to that midpoint just like they discussed there. But I am very conscious of being able to maybe take a quick step or something if I can to see a potential pickoff. All right. Because that is like probably that is the toughest call in B position along with the back end of a double play. All right. So the big thing there is, if I can take that step, I'm going to take the step toward the 45 line and try to get set and see the play at best that I can. I mean, it's a tough call there, those pickoff plays at first base, but you want to get the best look you can, and you certainly don't want to be looking up and through people. Like if you're too close to the line and, you know, basically you're seeing arms and elbows and legs and everything else, all right? So we do see that. Same thing when you're in C position. One of the toughest calls you have there is the steal of third, or a play when there's a runner on second moving to third base, you know, like on a ground ball, a shortstop that's in the hole, that kind of play. Again, stepping up toward the 45 cutout, the third base side anyway, and get the best angle that you can is the best thing that you can do there. And that's what I try to teach when I'm talking to guys and newer umpires and such. The other thing in general is just trying to step up. You know, when you have a ground ball, you're in C position, a ground ball, routine ground ball, the shortstop, you step up, face the ball, and then, you know, the ball takes you to wherever the play is going, usually first base, and then you move where you can to get set before the throw gets there. Same thing can happen in B position, where you step up as well, you let the throw happen, and then you get the best positioning that you can. So stepping up is something that people need to do. A lot of times you see umpires that don't really move once the ball is hit, and they kind of stay in the same spot, and they don't gain any better angle or distance toward the play, all right? So those are a few things that he was talking about in his article. It's definitely worthwhile to take a look at. And if you're in an umpire camp anytime soon here in the fall, you can do that as well if you're in C position or B position. Well, you know, three umpire system, we frequently are in C position there, but you're not having plays at first base. But still, you can step up and get plays there as well, all right? If you're in B position in a three umpire system and then you have a play at first base, there's a little bit difference there, usually in, you know, deep B where you're square to the foul line. But sometimes you are able to step up. Sometimes it's better to get your angle by going backwards, but you definitely don't want to be straight lining yourself. So those are a few things to think about. I thought that was interesting, and those are a few things that I'll be talking about with the umpires that I see at this next coming weekend's Doan two-man camp.
Well, day one of the Doan two-man umpire camp went well. It's always a little bit lighter day. We start later in the afternoon, like check in noon to 1 o'clock or so. And then there's usually a ball game. So we had a one ball game, an inter-squad game from Davenport University from 1:30. And we had some umpires that worked that and learned some things. We had guys working a couple innings, you know, either working the plate or the bases. And they got some instruction from the umpire instructors that were on the field there. And then we talked to the other campers that were there watching. Because in umpire camps, you can always learn a lot by watching the games and talking to the instructors and talking to the other campers sometimes too, seeing what people do well, seeing what people don't do so well, and trying to correct yourself the best that you can from that as well. Then we had Tim Farwig speak, and Tim is a longtime Doan umpire camp coordinator, coordinating all the different things. I've kind of done the two-man stuff this year because Tim was not available, but he usually does the three-man stuff. So if you ever come to the Doan camps, Tim is usually there helping to run the show. He also does that for other CBOA camps and other camps around the country as well. He's off the field now as a full-time Division I umpire. He decided to step away from the field for his own reasons, and now he does other things, and he does help out still in the umpire community as a camp coordinator and instructor. So it was a pretty successful day. We had really good weather. We also had our pitch track technology that we're using, in which it's basically a device that hooks up to a computer, a laptop, has a screen and everything, sits on top of home plate, and can tell you, you know, balls in, out, up, down, whatever it might be. You got to have a catcher there. And so we had, we're messing with that. We'd just gotten that. Not a cheap piece of equipment, but definitely a worthwhile one. A lot of camps are starting to go to those kind of things. So the Doan camp needed to do so as well. So we were messing with that as well. A lot of games coming on Saturday, a lot of individual instruction. The campers here will get a whole game on the plate and a whole game in the field and working those bases. So they'll get a lot of individualized instruction there. Plan to do that as well on Sunday. Currently the weather's not looking so great, so we'll see what happens, and we might have to move to an indoor facility. But that could be an opportunity to use our pitch strike zone technology stuff and work with that. And then also we are going to maybe have some gym time available, and we can work on some individualized things there too, maybe a little classroom kind of stuff too. So in some ways that can also be a good time. The biggest thing when you come to camp is just want to make sure you get enough time on the field and get your attention that you need to try to help yourself get a little bit better. And if you get that in and you get some classroom stuff and you know, more philosophy and theory, that's a little bit of a good thing as well. So that is the update for day one of the Doan camp. Off to a good start.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Day two of the Doan two-man camp for 2023. Things went pretty well. Weather was great, which was nice. Looks like we'll probably have good weather again tomorrow. It's always tricky when you have weather situations and people don't get all the opportunities that they paid for. But anyway, I was on a field for a couple of games with a couple of umpires from outside of the Grand Rapids area, and they did a very nice job. They had a couple tricky situations. One of them was like in the first inning. So they had some runners on base, and they had a ball hit up the left center field gap, and they're playing on a turf field, so the ball got there pretty well. One runner scored, and then the batter runner ended up with like a double, and another runner ended up on third. But as the play was developing, the outfielder threw it into the cutoff man, and for some reason the cutoff man decided to throw it to third, though he really had no chance to get the runner on third.
and the ball went by the third baseman and into the third base dugout. So the coach for the opposing team was coming out and saying, hey, isn't that two bases from the outfield? Isn't that two bases from the outfield? Which, of course, he's correct, all right? And the plate umpire was like, no, was he not right there? But anyway, so I wasn't I was watching the play, and I was watching my umpires more, so I wasn't paying as close as attention to the batter runner. But I felt like he got to second base before the throw, because we know that's time of the throw. And if that was the case, then he would score along with that runner on third once it went out of play. But anyway, after the inning ended and things settled down a little bit, I went and talked to the umpires and I said, did you have that batter runner on second base? And they're like, oh, no, he hadn't gotten there yet, which is, you know, I mean, it's their call. It's their judgment. And I'm not saying that they're wrong, because I wasn't 100% sure, but whatever. So I went over and I talked to the coach and told him, yeah, you're correct. It is two bases. And they're like, well, he was standing on second base. That's what the coach was saying. And I'm like, well, they thought that he hadn't reached second base. So that was the end of that. Then a little bit later in the game, probably like halfway through the game, we had a guy on second base, and he was trying to steal third or advance to third base. And we had backswing interference. Now, we're playing high school rules, all right, Federation rules. And so we have this situation. The guy gets a third base. It does affect the throw. The catcher's trying to throw it, and, you know, he can't really make the play because he got hit with the bat on the backswing. And so, anyway, the coach, same coach on the other team, and Chris's team ends up losing. You know, that's always the way it works, right? He's like, well, he's in the box. He's in the box. This is like what he's arguing, whatever. And so then the opposing coach that, you know, their catcher, he comes out and says, isn't he supposed to be out? And they were, my umpires were sending him back to second. Now, in college baseball, it is like kind of like a reset. You know, they don't really call that. I don't know why, but it seems like they should. I mean, pro ball, same thing, you know, OBR. But in high school baseball, and I remember looking this up a couple of years ago, whatever, backswing interference is an out. And I'll stand corrected. I haven't looked up the rule since I'm talking about this, but I'm quite certain. I'm about 99.9% sure. Actually, I'm 100% sure. But anyway, if you want to look it up, and if I'm wrong, please let me know. But so I went and I talked to the umpires. I'm like, that's supposed to be an out. High school rules. There we go. So they got it right, because, you know, I know I'm not technically umpiring the game. I'm just supervising and instructing. But it's to me, when I'm on the baseball field, I want people to get calls right. Okay. And if I have a way of doing it, which I do in that situation, I'm going to make sure they get it right. So they called him out, and there you go. Of course, the other coach was not very happy about it. So I talked to him, and he's still saying, well, he was in the box, because he thinks, like, his, you know, if his hitter's in the box, he has a right to swing, and if it hits the catcher, then too bad, which is not true, because, you know, if it hits the catcher, you should have control of your bat. You can't interfere with his throw. I mean, that's the way it is. So he's like, well, it's in the box, you know? I'm like, of course it was in the box. Backswing interference is always going to happen in the box. Where else would it happen? I mean, what? We're not going to have it when he's stepping out of the box taking a practice swing. I mean, that's, you know, not the way it works. So it's kind of a stupid argument. But anyway, I told him, yeah, that's the rule. And of course it happened in the box, and he can't interfere with his throw. I mean, you know, he impeded him. So he didn't like that, but whatever. So, you know, we went with it, and the game ended. There wasn't any big to-do about it, but I'm sure he wasn't very pleased. So those are the kind of, I guess, unique situations that we had yesterday in the games that I was helping out with and instructing. And I thought that might be interesting for some of you out there, too. I'll give another update on the last day of the camp, and that'll pretty much wrap up the Doan two-man camp for this season. I will be helping out also with the three-man camp in a couple of weeks, so I'll be giving some reports on that as well. Well, day three of the Doan two-man camp was a success. The weather held for us. It was supposed to be almost an all-day rain thing that they were predicting a couple of days ago. And in the end, it just ended up being a cloudy, you know, overcast kind of, a little bit dreary day, a little bit cool, but it didn't really rain very much. So we were able to get all the games in, and all the umpires were able to get the work in that they wanted. I had a couple of games with a couple umpires that did a nice job. But a couple of things I noticed, you know, There was one umpire I had a couple of days ago that took his mask off too much. That's usually not the problem. Usually the problem with umpires that are still figuring some things out is that they don't take their mask off enough. I don't know exactly why that is. Maybe it's because, you know, they haven't developed the skill of taking it off with their left hand and getting it back on, and so they just want to leave it on when they can so they don't have to worry about it. But anyway, I had one particular umpire that had a little bit of an issue with that. You know, basically what I was telling them, and other instructors too along the way here, was you just need to get your mask off when you got to potentially make a call. So obviously, if you're making a call at the plate, you know, you got a fair foul situation, there's something strange going on in front of you or whatever, you know, a ball to the backstop and the guy might throw it back for a play at the plate or something, you got to get your mask off. Yeah, there's a few times where it's okay to keep your mask on. And sometimes something might happen so quickly that you can't really get it off. I understand that. But most of the time, we should be able to get it off. Anyway, we also were, you know, there's some things that I guess it's a little tricky sometimes for guys to figure out in two-man mechanics, like who's got what fly ball. So like we had a situation where there was a pop fly, like right in the first inning, first or second batter, right behind second base. Second baseman was drifting back, right fielder's coming in, first baseman's going out a bit. So that's a ball that you one should go out on because we have converging fielders. Guys could run into each other. Potential catch below the waist, right? So you should go out on that. But in this situation, boom, right away, U1 is cutting into the middle. And then I look and see the plate umpire moving up toward third base for some unknown reason. I mean, we talk about this after. Why? It's, I don't know. Which I guess is better than making up something. But anyway, you just got to be reading your partner. As in two-man, you have to read your partner a lot. And it really matters as you go up to three and then four man, reading your partners and what they're doing and then reacting off of that. So we really only have that with nobody on base more than anything. And I guess with a runner on first, you should definitely be reading your partner to see what he does. I mean, the plate umpire should be going to third base, but we do have to kind of read our partner a bit there, especially when we're unfamiliar with him or her. That they're going to actually cover third and do what they're supposed to do. But really, the reading of things is just when U1 is an A, more than anything. So the plate umpire's got to see what he does. If he goes out, then he's got everything. If he, you know, if he doesn't, then you just, you know, you got your other responsibilities. You're still coming up and having a second set of eyes. We had that. Proper ways to point, you know, fair and foul, or just get in position, you know, like your belt buckle on the line, whether you're a base umpire or a plate umpire. And then pointing, of course, you know, our order of operations is fair foul first and then catch, no catch. So we had a few situations where we had to get a little bit better on that. Other situations like a pop fly, you know, foul ball over toward, let's say, the first base dugout. That's, you know, more toward the home plate area there. Okay, plate umpire's coming over. It's probably going to be his catch, no catch. But then I've got a U1 just kind of standing on the line. I'm like, man, you got to pinch over here. You got to see if you can see the glove. That's always a thing on any of these fly balls, is trying to see the glove the best you can, or get the best angle you can to see the front of the glove so you can see if the guy catches it or not. And even if it's not your primary responsibility for that catch or no catch, you need to be a second set of eyes. If your partner comes to you and says, well, what did you have? Well, hopefully you maybe had something, or you can just tell them what you saw and you did the best you could to work to get your best angle. Same thing with base umpires, you know, and two-man working the inside and B and C. You know, you're not supposed to crack lines in two-man to go out to the outfield. It's not really going to help you. But so I guess the best you can do is just get up maybe to the front edge of the grass, the infield grass. That's sometimes difficult to get there too. But more than anything, it's just about getting the best angle you can to see the front of the glove, like I'm saying. So if you move left or right or whatever, there's sometimes fielders in your way that you got to kind of move out of the way of too. And you try to get set and see the catch or no catch the best that you can and make a good call on that. So that was something that we talked about as well. you know, the front and back end of double plays when you're the base umpire, you know, that call at second. Yeah, sometimes there's a tricky play and you got to kind of stick with it. But usually that's an out that's made. And then you've got to, like, get, you know, make that call as you're moving toward first base and then get yourself set to make that call at first, because that's usually our tougher call. That's usually our potential banger is at first. So we want to get there so that we can make the best call we can at first base and not just be hanging back towards second base and make the call halfway across the field. One, it doesn't look good. And two, you're not in as good a position to maybe make that call. So we had that situation that we talked about as well. You know, there was a couple of strange situations that happened in their previous game that these guys had, but they didn't really have anything strange in this particular game. So that was good. We didn't have that weird kind of backswing stuff going on or all that kind of stuff that was happening, or interference or whatever. So overall, pretty good. We got some good feedback from other umpires or in the camp. They felt like they learned a lot and improved, which is really the whole point of it. I mean, the point of going to a camp is, yeah, you're trying to get better assignments. I mean, we're not going to kid ourselves. That's what everybody's trying to do, move up for whatever level they're trying to move up to. But really, the thing you have control over is, can I get a little bit better during this time that I'm here? And I think that there was a good number of guys that could say yes to that. So that means it was a success. So I guess overall, the Doan two-man camp for this year was a success. In a couple of weeks, we'll have the three-man camp, and I'll be there as well. And I'll do some reporting on that when that time comes. Well, there you have it. Another episode in the books of the Hammer and Umpire podcast. I thank you very much for listening and certainly getting to this point in the podcast. I know people might skip around a bit here and there to listen to certain things, but I know there's a good number of you that actually listen to the entire podcast, and I appreciate that. Like I said, I will be helping out and instructing and such at the Doan three-man camp at the end of September. And I will report back on that. That will probably be one of my next podcasts that I do. You see the title of this podcast, Band of Brothers. That's really what we are in the umpiring world. I know that's like the World War II reference as well. I'm a history teacher, so not surprising that I throw that kind of stuff in there. But we are a band of brothers trying to work together to be the best that we can be on the baseball field and help each other do that. We definitely compete against each other for better assignments and things like that. And umpires are competitive, and I think a lot of sports officials are in general. But we have to kind of keep those things in check and definitely help each other along, because I know that I want to have the best partners I can on the field. So I do what I can to help promote umpiring and promote getting the best umpires out there, so that when I'm working with somebody, I feel confident with them, and I hope that they feel confident with me. So I urge all of you to help in your local groups and associations to promote umpiring and promote the best ways of umpiring and get new people in and help them be successful. If we do that, then we'll have a healthier umpiring community, and we'll all be doing a better job and have less issues when we're on the field. So that would be nicer as well. Until that time, as I always say, keep calling strikes.